Ray, the season's here. Every team feels like, you know what? Hey, we got a shot, and we'll see what unfolds at the end of the first month and then second month and so forth and so forth. I want to get your thoughts, first of all, on Vancouver and Toronto. Toronto sounds like, I guess they're going to unveil their captain during the warm-up or something, and then Vancouver's waiting until two games into the season for their home opener. As a player, what do you make of this? Former player, I should say.
Everything's different. Everything's got to do with, you know, far more complicated mixes than when we were playing. And, ideally for me, you would name this stuff in advance, but it's not like they're going to name a captain in either place and the guys are going to show up at the rink and go, really? That's the guy? Like, that's not going to happen. You know, it's in Toronto, it's, you know, I think everybody seems to be on the page of it's John Tavares. And in Vancouver, I think it's the same thing. It's going to be Bo Horvat. And, maybe it'll turn out to be something different, but to the players, it won't be as big a shock or won't be as big a deal as it'll be to the rest of us. As far as Vancouver doing it at the home opener, I kind of like it. People are going to be talking about it. They're going to be excited to see. And then when he comes out for the player introductions, he's going to have the C on his jersey. I kind of think it's neat. The players will already know he's the captain.
Yeah.
You know, so I would say, again, like in many cases, the people that really are involved, they know what's going on. The rest of us are focused in on, okay, what about the timing? Is this the way it's always been done? And the answer is no, it hasn't always been done this way. The Toronto thing, they can say that they've had John Tavares as their captain since July, that they knew they were going to do that. And then this Matthews stuff has created a whole layer of a mess that they have to deal with. To me, it's kind of messy. I would have done it for an organization that usually gets a lot of things ceremonially right. Like when the Leafs do an in-game presentation of something, or they usually do a great job with it.
Yep.
I would have thought they would have announced the captain on the first day of training camp, had a press conference, made a big deal of it. Here's your captain. It's John Tavares, or it's, I don't know, Morgan Riley or Austin Matthews or whoever it's going to be. And, you know, it's all finished. It's kind of messy to do it the way they're doing it. I put it this way. I like Vancouver's way better than Toronto's way right now.
Ray Ferraro from TSN joins us. Ray, Dave Tippett, who I know, of course, a former teammate of yours. You know him quite well. Part of the Stash Brothers, I guess, if you want to call it that. Today he's going to have Draisaitl and McDavid split up. You know, and he kind of discussed why he, you know, I get the sense Dave really is wanting guys to feel like, hey, you know what, I got to do something, I got to be my part. And not that, you know, you're just relying on McDavid and Draisaitl, because he's being very open that they're probably going to play some shifts together at different times. I believe, especially coming out of the penalty kill, you're going to see them both out together, because neither one's going to be penalty killing for the most part this season, which I actually love that move. But just his attitude as a player, when you have a coach who's really being specific, not just in the room, but publicly about, hey, we got guys who are going to be penalty killers. We got guys who are power play guys. Like, very direct and to the point. I have to assume that that's a better approach and guys are going to grab it more.
As opposed to what? That he publicly didn't say so? Because you know your role. Again, Jason, like, whether, you know, Coach A talks about these are my penalty killers and these are my power play guys, whether he does that publicly or not, you know what you are. Like, you, that's already been kind of established. It's been talked about. Everybody gets what their role is. I mean, I don't think it matters other than, hey, you know, I'm going to get this opportunity, and damn, I like this opportunity, right? You know, like, that's the exciting part. Whether Tip's open enough to talk about it in public or not, some coaches are. As we know, some coaches won't even tell us the starting goalie on the morning of a game, which is something the league should mandate and say, look, this is part of the entertainment business, buddy. Make, you know, like, tell me who the goalie is.
Yeah, no, I agree. I guess I should have worded it better because he's basically separating guys. Like, not like last year, you had McDavid, Drysdale, Newt. They're all mixed in on their penalty killers. This year, he's like, no, no, no. The penalty killers are my bottom six guys. That's the role. Right, like more kind of specific and not separating them, but really trying to have certain guys take ownership rather than say, well, if you can't get it, we're always going to go back to our best players all the time.
Well, okay, so two things on that. One, Tip would be sensitive and connected to that because he was a bottom six forward,
okay,
and he was a penalty killer. And so I think he would know and probably feel the responsibility those guys feel and he wants them to take, you know, take pride in, because that's what he did. That earned him his career. It wasn't that he was a big goal scorer. It was that he could check, he could kill penalties, and he embraced that role. And he was one of the league's best penalty killers for quite some time. Certainly for our time in Hartford, he was one of the very best. As far as the safety net of Draisaitl and Nugent Hopkins and McDavid, whether he says it or not, they're there. Like if the penalty killing falls flat in its face for the first five games of the season, do you think they're going to wait around to see if somebody else can figure it out, or are they going to go, wait a minute, we just plopped away 8 points, we better get on this?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't think those top end guys were great penalty killers, right? Like the owner's penalty kill, Ray, has been so bad for 3 years, and he tied. I want to get your thoughts.
So last year, how was their penalty killing going to? I mean, whether Draisaitl and McDavid are good penalty killers or not, that's one part of the equation. When your goalie plays dodgeball, how are the penalty killers going to be any good?
Yeah.
Like, it's. I mean, we say it all the time, oh, our most important penalty killer is the goalie. And then we say, oh, the analytics of player A is not very good when he kills penalties. Well, maybe the goalie can't stop anything. And so you know what makes them way better penalty killers is if their goalie's better, if their defense is better. If the supporting cast is better. But do you have to block shots to be a great penalty killer? You don't. But you have to be willing to be in a shooting lane. They need you in a shooting lane. I don't know about you. I would prefer Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl not to break their foot.
Agreed.
Blocking a shot.
Yeah, I don't want him out there. I think it's actually a good decision. The funny thing is, even the year when Cam Talbot had a .919 save percentage, they made the playoffs, their penalty kill still sucked. So it's been an issue.
But you know what's been done now, and I think it's just, you know, I honestly love this part of analytics, is that you can look at a goalie save percentage. It might be .918,
yep.
And then you look at it and go, oh my gosh, look at that save percentage when they're shorthanded. He needs the structure of 5-on-5 to help him. He can't keep up to the play. He can't read the play when they're down a man. And there's some goalies, you look at their 5-on-4, like their shorthanded save percentage, and you're like, yikes, no wonder their penalty killing stinks. That guy can't keep up to the play.
Ray Ferraro from TSN joins us. Ray, when you played and even when you watch now, what do you define as a really good penalty killing forward? What do they do well?
Well, first of all, most of them are very quick. So when they go to pressure the puck, they can take away the time and the space, because I hated when penalty killers were really aggressive on me on the sidewall or down at the goal line. I hated it. I wanted to have just an extra half second to make a play. And so if the guy's not quick, you get that half second, you get that second, you can make a play. When they're all over you and they pressure you all over because they're fast, man, that's tough. Secondly, a good penalty killer has got the ability to read the play as the game goes on. I think I've used this analogy before. When you're on the ice, it's like you're watching a movie. And the movie's going along, and you know what the next scene is going to be before the next scene happens. That's reading the play. And some days you have it, and some days you don't. Some guys never have it. Some guys have it all the time. And for example, a player could have Connor McDavid's skill, but not be able to watch the movie one frame in advance, so he skates himself right into the defenseman. Look how many times McDavid finds a little sliver of opening, and then that opens up his skill to be able to be displayed. But it's because he can read the play. So a good penalty killer is fast, they're aggressive, they're able to read the play, and they're willing to eat a few pucks. Like, unfortunately for the penalty killers, and I'm glad I wasn't one, there's no way around that in today's game. you've got to eat some pucks before they get to the net.
Yeah, yeah, it's not not good at all. It's brutal.
No, they used to suggest to us, Jason, to block shots. It was kind of a suggestion, and now it's a demand.
Well said. Ray Farrar from TSN joins us. When you look around the league, Ray, obviously we've seen all the change in the Winnipeg Jets, man, you just look at their right defense. Suddenly Kulikov's their number one right defenseman, which is crazy compared to what they had on the back end there for the last few seasons. Like, that's a team that might take a step back. Everybody's high on Dallas. Are you in the same boat? And is it because they're young defense or their goaltending? What is it about Dallas that has you excited?
Well, I'll put another team with them that I think two teams really stand out to me, in particular in the West, that people are really fired up about, and that's Dallas and that's Colorado. And I think it's a little early on Colorado. You know, I talked to a writer there this morning, and I said, man, you know, a lot of things have to go right for Colorado. Like, you know, is Cale Makar the way he is in the playoffs, or at times is he going to look like a 20-year-old defenseman? Well, he's probably got like a 20-year-old defenseman. Or is Philip Grubauer able to hold the number one job by himself? Because if not, the backup's Pavel Francouz, who, I don't know, he's a good international goalie, but is he an NHL guy? I don't think anybody could know because he's never really played before. So that's just they won 5 games out of 27 in the middle of December and January last year. 5 out of 27. So less than a year ago, they were stumbling all over the place. Are they really worth being that excited about? Maybe kind of, sort of. And it's the same thing in Dallas. They really got their goals against under control last year. Ben Bishop was awesome. And, you know, Hudobin gave them excellent backup goaltending. So the strength of their team is in goal. Of course, everybody loves Heiskanen. But I think people are excited because Joe Pavelski adds another layer to scoring there. And there were times when you look at Dallas's lineup and go, man, if Ben, who didn't have a great year, and Sagan and Radulov aren't scoring, where are the goals going to come from? Well, now you're looking at a guy that is a wizard on the power play in Pavelski. And can he get you 25 to 30 goals? Well, it seems like he does every other year. So that's what they would be thinking. That's, I think, one of the reasons why people are excited about the Stars.
Ray Farrar from TSN. What do you make of the Oilers, Ray?
I think they're going to be better. I'll go back to the goaltending, which, of course, is going to that's where I'll start, and that's going to determine a lot of what they're able to, you know, what they're able to be or do, or is, you know, can they get enough saves to be good? I think they'll defensively, I know they'll be better. Structurally, they'll be better. Dave Tippett will be really, really good for them in that regard. It feels like a little bit more of a fresh start than just changing coaches as they did in the last couple of years. Like, this feels fresh. Kenny Holland's new, Dave Tippett's new, Jimmy Playfair's new. Like, everything's a little bit, well, not a little bit, a lot different. And so there's a different way to look at things, and I think that brings a little bit of enthusiasm. I'm really concerned that they're going to get enough goals from their wingers. Like, if I'm an Oilers fan, I'm looking at that and going, well, who's going to score? And when are they going to score? And can they keep these three centers apart? Or do we really think that McDavid's going to finish the year with Thomas Yurko and James Neal as his wingers? That's not happening. There are going to be changes. What are the changes going to be? What can they do? I think they should be closer to banging around the playoff bubble with some teams that you can go, if everything goes right, they could be in there too. But I don't think they're not a world beater for sure. They're not a cup contender, not in my eyes yet. And they're probably a ways away from that. But to me, the lack of scoring on the wings, the questions that you would have in net, or that I have in net, those are the biggest negatives to their team.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Obviously, they're going to need some players to play better. The one thing I just Dave Tippett, I don't know, maybe it's a new season, and so you're always like, wow, but just talking to players. The other thing, Ray, that's very different, number one, they don't have a teenager on their team for the first time in 11 years. They don't even have a 20-year-old or a 21-year-old. Their youngest guys, Ethan Bear and McDavid, they're both 22. Like, this team, I felt, was crushed year after year after year by young guys who didn't know how to play. And I think, like, Chase on, these guys might not be flashy, but like there's something just about veterans who know how to play the game. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, it does. Kenny Holland's got this phrase that he uses, and I've heard him use it 100 times in Detroit, and he says he's a real pro. And what he means is this guy can play in the NHL. We're not hoping he can play in the NHL. We know he can play. I'll give you an example is Riley Sheehan. Like, he's a pro. Is he going to score 30 goals for you? Nope. Is he going to be able to play for you? 100%. Is he going to be able to fill that fourth-line role for you when he's healthy? Absolutely. Can he play up a little bit for a couple of weeks? Yes, he can. Are you going to wish he skates a little better? Sure. But he's a pro. And so the more questions you take away, the better chances you are that your team is going to be better. And you're right, Jason. We've talked about this for as long as I've been doing this show, and you know people have been talking about it forever with the Oilers. It's like you can't force feed kids into this league because they just get crushed. Their spirit gets crushed, and that's a generalization because some guys can do it. But look at the number of times they've tried to force feed a guy in, and it just doesn't work.
Yeah,
well, I like their approach this year. And if they had, Jack Hughes, they'd find a way to get him in the lineup. They don't, so they're gonna work their way. You know, sometimes they can work, sometimes it doesn't. Most times it doesn't. I like this approach much better.
Quickly, speaking of Jack Hughes, what do you make of him and his size? Right, like it's smaller guys. It's tough to come in and dominate right away. Now Patrick Kane did it, but he was 19, not 18. What do you make of Hughes and just the size and maybe the strength factor more than size?
Well, to dominate, he's not going to dominate. I mean, like there's Kaapo Kakko is physically much more prepared to play in the NHL. Jack Hughes will have the benefit of playing with Taylor Hall. He'll be on a power play that I think is going to be really good. If you look at it and you got Subban on the point and you got Hughes and Hall and Gusev and Palmieri, all of a sudden you got the makings of a place where you can put some points up on the board. I think he's going to do fine. I think he's going to struggle with the strength stuff. Like most 18-year-olds, go back to when Ryan Nugent-Hopkins got jammed in to play, and he was just... You could see he could play, but you're like, oh my gosh, somebody skates by him really fast and he's off balance, right? He's a boy, and Jack's going to run into that a little bit. But there's an underlying confidence in Jack Hughes. I've got to meet him a few times, and he's a really, really impressive kid from a mental standpoint, like a strength standpoint. But physically, he's going to run into a brick wall once in a while, and it's going to be really hard for him. But... He's not, as I said, he's not as physically ready as Kaapo Kakko to play. He's an 18-year-old kid. He's a young 18-year-old, too. He's not like 18 the old side. He's 18 the young side. Got a long ways to go strength-wise, but I'll tell you, the kid is good. He is really good to watch.
Ray, the Sharks winning the Cup?
Or are we picking them again? No, I am not picking them this year. I'm picking Tampa again. Tampa's my new San Jose. I'm going to pick them every year till they win. And as you can see how that's worked out with the Sharks. But no, I'm not taking the Sharks. The Sharks aren't getting out of their division this year.
It's eerie how we have the same pick again. I also have the Lightning winning the Cup. So we'll see, right? We're either going to drown our sorrows or celebrate together.
I'll tell you one guy I'm not going to Vegas with, and that's you. Me and you never win.
No.
But I'm hanging on to it, mister.
Hey, got to go. Eventually I'll get it right. And then I'll talk about it for 20 years because the next 20 I'll get it wrong. So that's how it'll go.
I'm still talking about the Little League World Series in 1976. That's 43 years. You can do it. Once you win, you can do it forever, man.
Oh, I love that idea. Awesome, Ray. Well, enjoy tonight, and we'll talk to you next Wednesday.
Yeah, I hope everybody has a great start to the season, and lots of fun for all of us that love the game, and the Oilers will be interesting, as are many teams, and going right now.